To be a tall man, looked like he might have been in a dark blue Navy uniform. He had a rifle, some kind of weapon with him. And as we were standing there trying to get our colleagues through the passageway, he pointed the gun at us and shot.
Lots of witnesses talking about the man accused of killing 12 people in a gun rampage because he went crazy in the morning at the Washington Navy Yard. He's described by friends as a Buddhist. And a guy who speaks Thai and could not be the shooter. But, yes, the alleged gunman, according to all descriptions, was that guy, Aaron Alexis of Fort Worth, Texas, who was in the Navy Reserves from 2007 to 2011. Now it's been noted that he's been treated multiple times for psychological issues, including sleep deprivation, anger, paranoia. He had most recently been treated at a VA hospital in New England. I mentioned his Navy service. When he was discharged, he was upset, then had gotten some jobs working as a civilian contractor. As the story goes, he was studying while working a computer job, and they're looking into some of the claims that he recently lost a position, which they say may have set him off at civilian contractor position, but set him off enough that he went to the Naval Yard in Washington, D.C., and was one of six contractors on an IT project. He and five co-workers on that project were staying in a residence inn. So he was gathering arms, then went in and was randomly shooting people, killing 12 people, and then ultimately he was killed himself in an exchange of gunfire. Everybody who was armed, had a badge, and anything to do with anything made it to that Navy Yard in about 7 minutes. But it was 7 minutes too late. The first responders for the people who were already gunned down, and they could barely talk and describe the scene. It was just that awful. It was that awful. And there are all kinds of things about different little altercations that he had. And now it's a question of how does this happen? How does he go on the shooting spree? What ultimately was the motive? Was it because of the lack of the job, being fired from the job or whatnot? What ultimately has led to what is another horrible, senseless, tragic situation? And ultimately, who's accountable? Who's in charge of safety on the base? How did he get a clearance that was one level below top secret? For goodness sake, we are giving out millions of clearances to the people who are being contracted, and how are they being vetted? If things are starting to pop up on the radar with him, I'm wondering, how is it that somebody didn't see something in his personality? Of course, you could never say, I mean, if we could do that, then for goodness sake, we would stop any of the horrific things that have happened, including re-racking the tape and going back to Newtown, Connecticut. However, I think especially when it comes to military bases or Navy Yards and things like that, we'd think that we would learn our lesson and, if anything, beef up the security. So what happened, and ultimately who's responsible, and the thing that can happen, you cannot get those lives back. Oof, rough. And some people are taking advantage, including a foreign minister from Russia who ripped the United States on Twitter because of what happened at the Naval Yard. So interesting reaction to that. Terrible reaction to that, actually, but an easy way to kick the United States in the groin when somebody does something just abhorrent. So the results of testing of blood and environmental samples that were picked up by those UN inspectors, those chemical weapons inspectors, after last month's suspected chemical weapon attack outside of Damascus, have been released, and they do show that sarin gas ultimately was used, but the people that were on the ground conducting the tests were sent all over the place, meaning they were sent to five different areas to gather up the information, and in doing so had limited time and really needed more time to do some of the stuff that they could have done testing-wise and whatnot with shells and things that were left behind on the scene. So some of them not feeling completely satisfied with what they were able to find. Ultimately, what does it mean? It means that already the agreement is in place to get the chemical weapons, and that's apparently already started to happen. So this chemical weapons report, for what it's worth, in tying up, I think, at least some of what some of the major points that were discussed at the UN, it's helpful, I guess, from that point of view to know what the weapons report showed, because there's a few missing things, too. It's an imperfect crime scene, for sure. The five locations where they used the munitions on August 21st, where they believe they landed, were limited, and they had contaminated evidence, so that's hard to try to make an observation with that. And one of the locations included a rooftop of a five-story building in a nearby field. The UN inspectors were able to recreate a narrative of how a pair of rockets detonated prior to impact. They were about 4 feet in length, and they had warheads and were capable of holding 15 gallons of liquid chemicals. Wow. Measurements taken for both rockets matched the description of a 330-millimeter artillery rocket. And the most important thing, I guess, about the site, that one site, is the trajectories of the two rockets allowed them to assess about the firing point, and they were armed, they say, from the northwest, for whatever that means. Crime scenes contaminated, things, 50 pages in this report, rather, to try to understand what this conflict entailed. By the way, there was a temporary ceasefire that lasted four times in between so they could gather the information that they needed. 5 hours daily is what they were getting, to try to pull together all the information from the scenes, but it is definitely lacking in some hardcore stuff that they were hoping to have, the UN was hoping to have. But I think it's all there, that chemical weapons and sarin gas was used. It's just a question of, that they might not ever answer, as to who was behind it. Putin swears, the president and the ally of Syria, that it wasn't the rebels, that it was definitely not Assad, and the U.S. insisted it was Assad's regime. But nevertheless, it doesn't matter from the point of view of something is happening with the weapons, but do you think we got them all? Hey, hang with us. Rest of the hour coming up around the bend. We're kicking it to the other side. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment permanent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw-free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, "It's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel." Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
Talking about the situation in Syria with the UN's chemical weapons report being released, and he's in the wings right now in our virtual green room, veteran CIA analyst Ray McGovern, who says that here's the deal with all of this, and we're going to let him flush it out for you, that why, when we know what's going on with the Assad regime, why is it that we're dancing around in circles with all of this? And certainly, as somebody who's a veteran CIA analyst, he knows, he's seen all this stuff come in and out of the door, and he's been a guy who's briefed presidents. And he also, by the way, is the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I love that. And he just had a piece in the Miami Herald, and it was the op-ed piece was "To Persuade Skeptics About Syria, Obama Should Follow Reagan's Example." Hey, thanks so much for popping on the show. We certainly appreciate your time, Ray.
You're most welcome.
So the headline in that op-ed was brilliant, by the way. So Obama certainly didn't follow Reagan's example. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, there's precedent for releasing very sensitive information for higher state purposes. What I was referring to was an incident, a terrible incident that happened when I was on active duty, so to speak, as a CIA analyst. What happened was there was a terrible bombing in Berlin of a discotheque frequently by U.S. service people. And two U.S. soldiers were killed. Several, a score, were injured. And all told, there were about 230 people severely injured. Now, we found out, because we had been intercepting Libyan communications, that this was a Libyan operation. And we told the president that, and he said, damn, you know, he was not pleased. So what he did, this was the 5th of April when this happened, 1986. What he did was he told his Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, get those aircraft ready. We're going to bomb the hell out of Gaddafi's palace, and we'll hit Benghazi as well while we're at it, and we'll get that guy. We'll get him, okay? Now, they did that 10 days later on the 15th of April and succeeded in killing not Gaddafi, but his 15-month-old little daughter and severely wounding his 3-year-old youngest son and killing a whole bunch of civilians in the process, leveling the palace. But you know, Gaddafi knew where to hide. Now, one has to realize that before 9/11, people actually cared about little kids being killed.
Mm.
No, they really did. Yeah, the younger set, you know, might not figure that, but people really got irate about all this, and they said, "Well, you know, Reagan, you're pretty quick on the draw. You know, you shoot from the hip again. We know that you hate Gaddafi, so you just use it. How do you know? How you show us? You know, show us the evidence that the Libyans did this thing in Berlin." And so the president came to us and he said, "Okay, let me see that message again." So we showed him the message and it said, "Operation successful, 1:30 this morning. And the best thing is no one will ever know it was us." So we gave it to the president and he said, "Okay, well, I want you to release this." And we said, of course, No, you don't understand. The Libyans don't know that we intercept their messages, and they certainly don't know that we can decrypt them. So we'd be sacrificing a major source here. No, we can't do that. And Reagan, to his great credit, said, "Do it. Do it anyway. I don't care." And we did. And the heat came off. Public opinion turned around. Now, I have to hasten to add that, you know, I think I don't defend what Reagan chose, how he chose to react, but at least the world public opinion kind of calmed down. And I have to say that Reagan showed a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. Now, why do I mention that? Because it's a perfect analogy to what should happen now. That's why I wrote that op-ed. That's why I wanted to get it in a prominent newspaper. And there's been no reaction, of course. I never get any reaction from the government. But the argument, I think, is solid. If, as the administration claims, they have proof that Bashar al-Assad ordered that chemical event there outside of Damascus, they really ought to show us the meat. You know, where's the meat? Show us the evidence, just as Ronald Reagan did. And there are all kinds of accounts of that message, and some who claim to know about it say, "Well, no, you know, it wasn't that Bashar al-Assad was shown to know about it. No, it was lower-level Syrian army officers saying, 'Hey, you know what just happened? Did somebody order a chemical attack? Did you know what went down here? Somebody's got to tell Damascus about it.'" So we've got two very, very different versions of this intercepted message. The prescription for success, if the administration wants to sell its case that Assad was indeed responsible for this and that this proves it, release it. And each day that goes by without them releasing it makes me more and more suspicious that the evidence that was adduced to claim that, as they said, this evil dictator gassed his own people. Does that bring memories back? I used to say that about Saddam Hussein. My point is that the evidence that was adduced before Saddam Hussein, that he had weapons of mass destruction before we invaded there, well, that was fraudulent. People think because President Bush said it was mistaken, that it was mistaken. But I know it was fraudulent, and so does Senator Rockefeller, who was chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee when a 5-year study was completed by his committee, and he announced, and I quote, "The pre-war intelligence on Iraq was unsubstantiated, comma, contradicted, comma, or even non-existent, period," end quote. Now I ask you, what do you think non-existent intelligence looks like? Forgeries, maybe?
Yeah.
Things made out of whole cloth. Well, that's what went down before Iraq. And so, you know, you would think that Obama would have the the same decent respect for the opinions of mankind and for the rest of us, particularly Americans, to release that message so that we can see this time. And I'm quite willing to believe, I mean, Assad is no saint. He's
right.
Quite capable of doing that. But there's quite a different, a big gap between saying somebody is capable of doing that and that he did it, particularly when the incentive for a chemical strike was not with Assad. It was with the people who are opposing him because they knew that once that happened, the President of the United States would order his forces in on the side of them and not on the side of Assad.
Yeah, and you know this, Vladimir Putin, you know, the Russian president, is jumping up and down saying that it's not Assad, and so that placed some doubt for the rest of the world. There were people that were skeptical about it, so you would think that, you know, partially too with what you've said, that why not just jump into this, because this administration said we're going to be the most transparent, so why not just release it?
Yeah. Well, Alan Grayson, the congressman from Florida, braced Secretary Hagel, Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, a week ago, and he said, Secretary, you know there's a big dispute about what that message says. Will you be able to release that sometime soon? And Hagel said, what message?
Oh, yeah.
So he explained what it was all about, but there's been no movement on that. So sure, you know, that's what really needs to happen. Now, I think one reason that the administration doesn't release it is because it does not say what they claimed it said, and also they can't doctor it. They can't, you know, fool around with it because the Russians probably have the same intercept. And Putin is saying just the opposite, of course, that it wasn't Assad, it was the rebels. And right now they've got a kind of deal worked out, which is a very, very hopeful thing. I mean, this whole thing is going to be resolved without people being killed, hopefully. And so I don't want to muck up the works right now, but I think it's important for Americans to understand that they still can't believe what, for example, our Secretary of State John Kerry said on the 30th of August in that long press conference where he made this speech. And guess how many times he said, we know, we know, we know, 35 times.
Yeah.
So, you know, you say it 35 times, you expect maybe people will think that you really know. But I'm from Missouri. I want to see the proof because the incentive, as I said, was on the rebel side. And this business about the rebels not having sarin gas, it's too complicated to make and all that stuff. Well, give me a break. In 1995, a ragtag group of Japanese terrorists led sarin use in the Tokyo subway. People remember that. Now, did they get that from some government stocks? I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Sarin is not that difficult to manufacture.
Yeah. Hang on a second. We're going to continue our conversation with CIA analyst Ray McGovern. We spent a lot of time with the president in his past, obviously, with briefings and whatnot. And we're going to continue that on the flip side here on America Tonight.
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
Now, folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE. 855-340-7283.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
With Ray, and you know, Ray, it's interesting. You talked about when we first opened up. You talked about Reagan, and you gave the great example of how he felt, and he was pushing to release information, the communique that was intercepted and whatnot. And this was way back in 1986. Do you think that we're going to see this trend with not just the Obama administration, but future administrations? Is there more of that trend towards secrecy, toward not releasing it, toward not showing the proof? For what reason? Because it makes us skeptical that it's not really there.
Yeah, I think that may be the reason. I hate to say that, you know, but I've been around long enough that trust me doesn't do it for me anymore. Particularly when you have, you know, the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, is a self-confessed perjurer. He lied under oath to the Senate when he was asked, does NSA eavesdrop on American telephone conversations? He said, no, sir. And they had to come back and he said, well, what I said was clearly erroneous, but it was the least untruthful thing that I could say. Now, that's all on the record. You can see it on TV. And this guy is still head of the national intelligence apparatus of our government, the highest intelligence official reporting directly to the president.
Yeah.
And at the CIA is a fellow named John Brennan. He's the guy that claimed 2 years ago that in all the drone strikes in Pakistan for the previous year, not one collateral death ensued. Not one citizen was killed. You know, the reporters laughed him out of the room. It's ridiculous. People are counting. People on the ground know how many people. So what I'm saying here is that the credibility of the people he has working for him is not real high. Now, what are the reasons that they would adduce to say, well, we can't release this information? Well, one is, you know, they would argue, oh, we don't want the Syrians to know that we're eavesdropping on them. Well, hello, I'm sure they'll be really, really shocked. I mean, for them to be shocked would have to mean that they didn't read a newspaper or watch TV for the last 4 months when all these disclosures about the incredible capabilities of NSA to monitor this, that, and everything, including Syrian communication. So it's not as though Syrians would be shocked. And as for the information itself, it's already out there in the public domain.
Yeah.
The issue or the substance of the conversation, there are two versions to be sure, but there is absolutely no, unlike what Reagan did, there's very little danger to compromising sources and methods this time. And, you know, it's a sad thing to say, but I think that John Kerry has this little thing about punishing Assad, whether he did it or not. Kerry, of course, spent as much time in Israel as he spent anywhere else for the last couple of months, ostensibly to talk about solving the Palestine problem. But you know what? I suspect he was talking to his bosom buddy, Bibi Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, about Syria. They wanted to get rid of Syria. They wanted to get rid of Bashar al-Assad. And they wanted to keep the pot boiling. You see, the only country, well, there are three countries that think they would benefit from keeping the struggle going. Turkey and Saudi Arabia really would like to have the Sunni, which are the majority in Syria, and knock out the Alawites, which is the faction of the Shia part of Islam that Assad belongs to. They'd like to do that. Israelis, you know, they just like to see the pot boil, because as long as the Shia and Sunnis are at each other's throat, not only in Syria, mind you, but throughout the whole region, you know, they're not going to be turning their guns on Israel anytime soon. And again, you don't have to take my word for this. The New York Times, this is really interesting, the Times would carry this report. Their correspondents in Jerusalem on the 30th of August reported that she had taken great pains to consult with all manner of senior Israeli officials. And her question was, you know, what's your preferred outcome? What would Israel like to see the outcome in Syria be? And the answer from all of them, she said, was, well, our preferred outcome is no outcome. And she said,
What?
Can you explain that? And they said they were quite candid. They said, look, as long as the Shia and Sunni are at each other's throats, we profit. And as long as this, you know, doesn't, as long as the really bad guys like Al-Qaeda don't get the upper hand, then, you know, we're sitting pretty. And that, of course, is why they wanted the U.S. into the equation, because there's really no guarantee that Al-Qaeda and al-Nusra, in other words, the really bad guys, may not prevail. But once the U.S. was in, then that's sort of an extra special insurance that that would not happen. So that was the name of the game. They wanted mousetrap us in there. And what was really interesting is what Kerry did as soon as he concluded the agreement with his counterpart, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. He tooled off to Tel Aviv to try to hold Bibi Netanyahu's hand, say, this is going to be all right. Don't worry about it. We're not leaving you in the lurch. So we just thought that we ought to get chemical weapons out of Syria's hands. And one would think that the Israelis would be delighted about that. But there's a big, big danger here, because somebody's going to think to say, hey, here's an idea. Let's get all the chemical weapons out of the Middle East and all the weapons of mass destruction. And then the finger's going to point right at Israel because they have a sizable chemical warfare capability. And, of course, the thing that the president and anybody else would never even mention is their 200, 300, 400, we don't know exactly how many, nuclear weapons deliverable by sea, by under the sea, by aircraft, and by missile. So once you get into, really making a nuclear and chemical and biological free area of the Middle East, well, the Israelis won't want any part of that because they have the monopoly. They'd like to keep it.
Yeah. In all the years that you did this, Ray, as the stuff that you were analyzing, things that were coming in and conversations that you had, and up to now where we are, what do you think the American people should be the most concerned about? Because you saw things that definitely still didn't see the light of day.
Yeah. Well, the newspapers today were extending this calculus to Iran. Now, Israel would clearly like us to give Iran the same kind of bloody nose that we gave Iraq. They would like us to destroy the infrastructure in Iran on the pretext that Iran is working on a nuclear weapon. I have to tell you that Iran is not working on a nuclear weapon. And my colleagues, the honest ones, got together in the intelligence community in 2007, did a whole year of bottom-up assessment and concluded that Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon. Now, we're not talking about nuclear power plants. We're talking about a nuclear weapon at the end of 2003 and did not resume that activity. That judgment has been reaffirmed and rearticulated every year since, as recently as March of this year, by the intelligence community with high confidence and unanimously. So this notion that is spread around by the New York Times and Israeli diplomats that Iran could get a nuclear weapon, that's a very noxious thing because it has everybody afraid. And what I'm afraid now is that the Israelis will try to extract some kind of concession from the United States as a sort of a gift in so they don't bollocks up the agreement between the Russians and we and the Syrians. And that could mean rattling some sabers in the direction of Iran, because the folks who control the media here, the folks who largely control the foreign policy, I know that Secretary of State John Kerry and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, are very, very close indeed. And I guess I'd just finish by saying, this is not a new problem. George Washington, who was not only our first president, but, a general, he warned in his farewell address against what he called entangling alliances and passionate attachments of one country, our own, to the interests of another country, as though the interests of each were identical. They're not identical. In those days, of course, France had helped us out with the revolution. France was engaged in another war with Great Britain. And people say, oh, we ought to help the French out, because they helped us out. And Washington said, no, that's not the way you do it. You make these decisions based on your own national interests, and do not think ever that your own nationalists are synonymous with those of another country, like France in this example, and like Israel in the new example. So what we need to do is make sure that we expose people who think that way. Do I criticize them? Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, okay?
Yeah.
It's just that when you're Secretary of State, then I think he shouldn't be Secretary of State if he can't distinguish between the security needs of Israel on the one hand and the security needs of our own country on the other. That's a real problem.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, great insight there from Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst. Ray, thanks for joining us here on America Tonight.
Okay, you're most welcome.
We'll be right back. It's time to get healthy, and your first step towards a healthy lifestyle begins at the Healthy Living Expo, Saturday and Sunday, September 28th and 29th at the Music City Center in Nashville. Get your free tickets at thehealthylivingexpo.com and join us for Tennessee's most comprehensive health, fitness, and nutrition expo. There's over 100 exhibits with information and services to help create a healthier life. Also, more than 25 health screenings, cooking demos, and the latest fitness trends. Plus, visit the Longevity booth. Get free tickets at thehealthylivingexpo.com. There's prizes all day on the stages and at the booths, like fitness memberships to an area health club every hour. The Healthy Living Expo, September 28th and 29th at the Music City Center, Nashville. Get free tickets for yourself, your family, your friends, and everyone you know at thehealthylivingexpo.com. Get to the website now, because tickets are $10 at the door. The Healthy Living Expo, your first step towards a healthy lifestyle.
There's a huge and hushed up conspiracy going on that's about to turn your lives upside down in the coming few months. Unbelievably, the media are keeping quiet about this. I'm sure they know it, but they probably know that revealing it on TV will generate mass hysteria and chaos. But I believe you should be informed about it, because when the sinister agenda is finally accomplished and everything unravels, only those who know this secret info will survive and thrive. Go to 123conspiracy.com right now to see the truth. The video at 123conspiracy.com reveals the real, secret reason why Obama is after your guns and ammo. And it's not just in response to mass murders of preparing for war. It's something much darker. Go watch the video now at 123conspiracy.com before they shut it down. Again, that's 123conspiracy.com.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
You are now in the crosshairs. The NSA and FBI are treating you like a criminal and monitoring your every move. Ron Paul said recently, the evidence of the totalitarian nature of this government is on display undeniably every day. What's taking place right now is a coup and the destruction of the Constitution. Fortunately, there is something you can do about it. Learn how to be invisible, lock down your privacy, and even disappear forever. Go to privacylockdown.com to learn how. That's privacylockdown.com.
Second down and goal at the one. Dre in the backfield now with Mendenhall. Cardinals looking to punch it in, take the lead. Palmer under center takes the snap. Hand off Mendenhall, left side, pushing forward. And in, touchdown. The ball came out, but the ruling is a touchdown.
Lynch in the backfield. Here comes the blitz. Look out. Throws it outside. Lynch makes the catch, and he walks in.
First and 10 from the 27. Dalton back to throw. Dumps it off short. Caught by Bernard. Runs to the 20. 15.
Oh!
10.
Oh!
5. Touchdown! Bengals! Giovanni Bernard stepping on the gas pedal. He drives a minivan, but he runs like a Maserati.
I'll tell you what.
Looking in for the score.
Now first down. Snap to Rodgers. Throws the right side. Nelson. Leaping left. And off. Touchdown!
Folks, what an adjustment to the football on the back shoulder.
Jordy Nelson spinning high in the air to beat Bakari Rambo in the corner of the end zone. 15-yard touchdown play of 30-0 Green Bay. Here's Ryan looking to throw. There is Jones caught. 50, 40, Julio 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown Atlanta.
Holiday watches it hit at the 27, takes a giant bounce. He picks it up at the 18. Scampers out of the 25-30. Holiday out of the 40-yard line. Speeches, please.
Midfield, here we go. Holiday steps out of the tackle. 25-20. 15-10. 5 to the house. Brendan Holiday. The dagger, an 82-yard punt return for a touchdown.
Stick a fork in him and turn him over, Dave. These New York Giants are done.
As they throw for Hopkins, who catches the ball in the end zone for a touchdown. On the right side, the Titans were offside. That's going to be the penalty, but they will
whether or not Hopkins got his feet down.
One man to the right. He'll work in the shotgun, the snap. DJ looks left, fires into the end zone, got a man there. Touchdown! Stevie Johnson! Touchdown! Touchdown! He did it! He did it! EJ Manuel did it all the way down the field! The extra point to tie it up coming up.
Oh, yeah. What a week in the NFL. Two down and another 15 to go. Good time to remind all of you listening to America tonight that we do our Nail the Score each and every week on our Wednesday into Thursday show in the third hour for three segments. It's this easy. You just have to call once we've established the game of the week. Tell us who you think is going to win the game and what you think the final score will be. And as I said, I know there's some of you who get tired of jumping up on your soapbox and ranting about politics, so you have to have a breather from all the nonsense. And so you partake in football of some sort. The week capped off with the Bengals taking down the Steelers. And, boy, I think that had upset written all over it. In the beginning, Pittsburgh 0-2 for the first time in forever. And there were all kinds of crazy records that are already starting to take shape. But who's really going to emerge in the end? I think still too early for that. Denver's looking pretty good. That's certainly for sure. And there are some other teams that look like they could be contenders in the end. Like, how about Seattle? Seattle with the record for the crowd noise so loud in that Sunday night game against San Francisco. San Francisco just trashed. And Coach Harbaugh looked like he swallowed a canary. He was so upset you could see it. But Guinness World Records marks Seattle down for the largest stadium. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy crowd. They truly were loud. The decibel reading when they sacked the San Francisco quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, in the first quarter was 131.9 decibels. The previous record was 131.76, and that was set back in 2011 in Turkey. So that's cool. Guinness World Records. It's that's it. It's they're in the record books. They own it now, at least for a short time anyway. Matt, you watched those games. It was another crazy weekend, huh? How about it? The Jets to me absolutely look like garbage. And I think there's a couple teams where you could kind of put that label on them. But I would say that it's too early to call a Super Bowl for anyone. What do you think?
I think it wouldn't be too soon for the Seattle Seahawks, though. That team looks like an absolutely dominant team, and they're still, you know, not clicking on all cylinders, and they destroyed San Francisco on Sunday night.
Oh, they did. I was watching that game, and they killed them. And so the crowd was crazy. It wasn't a surprise, like I said, that they set that record because the crowd was so into it, and Harbaugh looked humiliated.
And if you look at it, too, it's kind of strange because week one, you have San Francisco absolutely throttling the Packers. The Packers coming back, throttling the Redskins, and then Seattle throttling the 49ers. And, I don't know, it's a little bit of a crazy week. My Vikings, of course, came up short once again. So that left a little bitter taste in my mouth. But it was a bit of a strange week, I think, in the NFL. And a lot of low-scoring games, too, other than you had the Seahawks. There's three big blowouts and then a lot of, like, kind of lower-scoring games. Because you had the Broncos destroying New York, Packers beating Redskins, as I said before, and then the Seahawks game, too. But other than that, a lot of more low-scoring games.
Yeah, there were some strange finishes. I always say this when we do Nail the Score. There is no symmetrical number, if you want to say that, or what are the typical football scores, because there aren't typical scores. Like the Bills beat the Panthers 24-23. You had the, Matt mentioned his Vikings. 31-30 was the score in that one. The Vikings lost that one. And the Chiefs beat the Cowboys 17-16. So the Chiefs are off to a 2-0 start. And that's a kind of a strange score, too. The Chargers beat the Eagles 33-30. That's higher scoring. but there was a last-minute field goal that stunned the Eagles and all the fans that were there in the stadium. And it was a weird week for the low-scoring games. The Saints beat the Buccaneers 16-14. The Raiders beat the Jags 19-9. And this is just the beginning of things with the capper, as I mentioned, the Cincinnati win over Pittsburgh, and that game was 20-30, so still pretty low. When you see some of these high flying affairs, it's just something to keep in mind that there are. That's why I always say that it's like lottery tickets. You know, you're circling numbers, you're coming up with numbers. There are no wrong answers in that, you know, in the game, because sometimes it is, sometimes it's oddball numbers. So I mentioned Harbaugh, and this was what's interesting. Richard Sherman, if you watch that Sunday night game, was the stud. And he called his former college coach after the Seahawks win over the 49ers on Sunday night, saying that Coach Jim Harbaugh didn't acknowledge him after the game. So, because Sherman had one of the Seahawks' three interceptions of Kaepernick, and he was asked by the NFL Network, they were carrying, they had guys there and they were covering the game. After the game, what he said to Harbaugh when he ran up to him at midfield and looked like he patted the coach on his backside, he said, "I told him good job, good game," but he didn't give him anything back. So he was in a good mood after that. And part of it is because there is kind of a little bit of a history between Harbaugh and Sherman, because of, like I said, because of some past history. The last time, what was it, a 42-13 win in December in Seattle, and, you know, there's some things that went back and forth between them. And, of course, he played four seasons for Harbaugh at Stanford, but they left the school for the NFL, and when he was asked about, you know, Sherman as a player, he didn't grade him very high. And so then he kind of put it back in his face, I guess, after the fact that they slammed, as Matt said, they slammed him to the ground. And it was a rough loss for him on the other side of things, for sure. So once again, I want to remind everybody, don't forget about nail the score, because We do that thing each and every week throughout the football season. You don't have to be a football fan. It's one of our game things that we do here. Every once in a while, we pull it out so we can clear out the prize closet. So you could be a winner. By the way, I think this was a smart thing to do. The Washington Nationals postponed Monday night's game against the Braves because of the shooting at the Navy Yard. The game was rescheduled as part of a day-night doubleheader on Tuesday because it was such an emotional day. And, you know, people were just riveted by what was happening there. It was very, very wise of them to cancel that. I always like to say this. If you want to send us your thoughts, you can do that by simply emailing us at americatonight.net. Thanks, Matt Johnson. Great work on those highlights from the NFL, and all of you for listening to this version of America Tonight.
Every time you eat a cooked food, your body responds by producing an increase in circulating white blood cells. This happens because nature designed us to eat food that is undamaged at the molecular level. When we heat food to normal cooking temperatures, we change the shape of the molecules into shapes the body cannot use. The body now looks at them as toxins and allergens. In an effort to protect itself from this irritant, the body intelligently increases the amount of circulating white blood cells to act as garbage collectors. The white blood cells gobble up all the unusable damaged food particles to neutralize their cell damaging properties. This puts stress on your organs of elimination, and your body is subject to cell damage and inflammation. If you'd like to start experiencing the benefits of undamaged protein in your diet, give One World Way a try. It is a truly undamaged protein powder that will thrill your tastes and every cell of your body. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit OneWorld, WHEY.com.